to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, our sponsor is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And they're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. They have a great inventory right now. Go by and see them. If you're looking for anything from a mower to a tractor, they've probably got it in stock. Attachments, they have a fully staffed service department. If you need something worked on, go up and talk to them. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Nice. All right. Speeding back to our guest, William Alter Kay. I guess I should let people know.
I just wanted to say
yes?
that John Deere is an excellent American company, and they are very popular up in Saskatchewan. You see John Deere tractors quite a bit.
Home.
Nothing yeah. runs like a deer.
That's right. Yeah, you know, it's funny. You come out to the West Coast, and there's all these different brands of tractors. And, you know, most of your big farms run John Deere. But huge market in a lot of these, what I would consider aftermarket tractors. But you go into the Midwest, and you buy a tractor, and if it's not green, you better sell your property and move, because they own
just
the Midwest.
Shameful.
Yeah, you're shaming.
They got competition out here for sure, but yeah, there is tremendous brand loyalty to
here.
The people that do buy them, man, yeah, they're fighting words.
It's yep. criticized. Yep. Right, so. Great company.
Oh, so...
Okay, let's get back.
Yes, so, Mr. K, we, you know, it seems like we're just hopelessly mired in this, like... I am
hopeful.
No, but I mean, it feels like, right? It feels like it's surrounding everybody, and they feel like there's no, yes, you can get smart about it. You can realize that this is all part of a big, basically kind of a big scam. But do you see, where do you see it going? You see us getting out of the trap?
I see a hammer called the EU crashing against an anvil called the U.S. Republican Party.
Oh.
The whole objective of this exercise is to shut down America's coal and oil industry. And the effort to do that is increasingly reaching resistance. Look at this Congress. I'm guessing 80% of them are already on record as saying they don't even believe the climate science. So they're certainly not going to put up with a whole series of policies and regulations that are going to continue to penalize fossil fuels in the name of this bogus climate science. I think things are coming to a climax here.
Yeah.
It's important to both sides, but I think there's sort of a falling away from the scales from people's eyes. I think more and more people, because they've been grinding on about this climate for so long. There's a lot of climate fatigue. When they do studies of what do Americans care about politically, climate is right at the bottom. Like in the real world of the issues that people are dealing with, like what the planet's going to look like 200 years from now, is not an issue. And I came across that trove. The Center for the American Progress is just sort of an adjunct of the U.S. Democratic Party. And in 2017, they thought they were going to embarrass the Republicans by exposing all the climate deniers in Congress. But when they finished doing it, and all they wanted proof of being a climate denier, and they had quite a list of all the things. If you thought the climate was unsettled, if you thought the climate science was unsettled, if you thought there really wasn't a consensus, you were a denier. If you said words like the climate has always been changing, you were branded as a denier. If you didn't think that a 1 degree increase in temperature was a big catastrophe, you're a climate denier. And at the end of the day, they realized there were over 180 Republicans in Congress that were deniers. And that shocked them. They were hoping to find a couple of dozen old retiring curmudgeons, right? But no, they realized that a huge portion of it. And their subsequent studies, they tried to shrink it and make it look smaller so there wasn't as many deniers. And they're clearly not counting them all. So now we're in the 118th. It's probably in excess of 80%. There's been a huge surge in them. and they're even more outspoken. And that's why the Center for American Progress website is such a treasure trove, because they've got video after video. And it's not the people you think. It's people like Liz Cheney coming right out on video saying climate science is junk science. It cuts a real broad spectrum, like Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz, et cetera. A huge spectrum of the Republican Party are on video, on audio, debunking the science.
Yeah, that
so
seems...
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. That I didn't realize that with Liz Cheney, but she was from Wyoming, so couldn't have been too crazy at one point.
That was fairly recent. Like, the point is that it's not a minority viewpoint within the Republican Party. Republican Party members don't even know the extent to which it's a prevailing point of view. Because some of these video clips, like Bob Good, I don't think he's from Georgia, but he's just standing there shouting, saying, climate change is a hoax, this is fake news. I mean, he's not pulling any punches at all. And I don't think there's even some articles about, Kevin McCarthy, because he comes from, his jurisdiction includes part of Kern County, which is Oil Patch.
Yep.
And there's some good articles with Kevin McCarthy really going after Obama, saying that he is manipulating the climate agenda, and he's to refuse to deal with the water issues in California, and he's manipulating the climate agenda to undermine California's petroleum industry. That's from Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, that's not surprising. I mean, he comes from farm country.
Yeah,
Kern. They say if Kern County was an independent state of the Union, it would be the fourth largest oil producer in America. They must have some serious oil down there.
Oh, yeah. California is sitting on a huge, huge reserve. I think one of the biggest in the world. But I think another factor facing this Congress is, not only are there a lot of skeptics in the Congress, but their constituents, I think, are getting pretty fed up with the whole thing. It's costing them money.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation's out of control. They're looking at all these policies that have led to, $9 for a dozen eggs. And they're looking for answers, and they're looking for action. And I think they're going to have to produce it. And with this whole climate change thing, it's killing so many industries, particularly in California. I mean, you can't drill offshore. You can't, like in McCarthy's district, full of oil wells. There's just all kinds of restrictions. They've shut down pipelines. People are paying $5 a gallon for gas. I mean, it's got to come to a head, and I think the legislators are getting pressured to make a change. And I think you're right. I think this Congress has a golden opportunity to move a lot of this stuff forward and get rid of a lot.
The House does. The Senate has no interest.
Yeah, the Senate is going to be a tough nut because I mean they're still well entrenched over there, and it's going to be hard. But I think if we can show an interest in the House to make these changes in 24, you might see the Senate flip, and then you're going to see some big changes.
Yeah.
Well, it would be a partial victory if the climate skeptics, who are the majority now, certainly of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, if they would start having powwows, if they would start making speeches. I don't think they're aware of their own strength in numbers. That Center for American Progress, they take you to an Excel spreadsheet, and it's got 300 videos and audios of U.S. Republican Congress people denouncing climate science. I keep thinking, what a bunch of fools for even posting this, because they started out trying to embarrass the Republicans, and then they became stunned by how many of them never bought into this
right kind
of crap in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a great resource. So I think part one is, be more outspoken about what you think about climate science, and try to get coherent about what is causing this. And that gets back to this whole European thing. Because if all we're going to do is say it's the Chinese communists are somehow manipulating you know, all of these business agents and all of these politicians are somehow publicly controlled by them. It is not politically plausible.
Well, they spread a lot of money out with folks. There's a lot of political pressure from Chinese money in this country. I mean, I don't
believe so.
Discount that.
Yes. This is true. It's like this. I watched a documentary a while ago, 90-minute one, and it was following the American-Israel Political Action Committee. It's a really powerful political action committee. And the creators of the documentary, they're following these sort of wealthy Jewish families around, and they whip up this whole conspiracy theory that basically, you know, you can make it look like these guys are actually controlling the American government. And what they're losing in that kind of a documentary is perspective of how crowded a room that is. Israel is not the only country in the world trying to influence the American government. China is not the only country in the world trying to influence the American government. Saudi Arabia and Taiwan and around the world, everyone is trying to influence the American government. So it's a really crowded room. If you just focus on one group, yeah, you can make them into this diabolical monster that's controlling it. That's sort of what I do with the EU. But when you really look at how institutionally integrated the American government is through NATO and through the OECD in particular and through G7 and a lot of these other institutions, the American government, like the ministerial conferences and the heads of state conferences, there is an integration going on there that does not exist with any other collection of governments. And the EU is not some little country. The EU has a population of 450 million. A lot of those are rich countries, you know, Germany, Sweden, that. They're not, this isn't some backwater. They exert a lot of influence. And as I have pointed out in some other writings, there's about 8 strategic corporations in Europe that dominate America's publishing industry, dominate America's music industry, advertising industry, etc. And no other country or collection of countries exerts that kind of influence on American culture or owns that extent of cultural assets within America. It's, you know, China does not own 1% of the book publishing and movie production and music industries that these European countries do.
Well, Germany, though, is the main player there. I mean, they're the ones that contribute the most money, aren't they?
They're the richest country. Germany has a population of around 88 to 90 million. It's smaller than the state of Montana. They're certainly the richest country in the world, and they're the ones that are, not in the world, but in Europe, and they are definitely the main cog. In terms of climate fanaticism, no, the Swedes are way ahead of them on that front.
Right.
The Swedes imposed a carbon tax 30 years ago.
Did they really?
They had a carbon. It was in 1988, the same year the IPC was formed, so that is 25 years ago, 24 years ago.
Wow.
They already had a carbon tax. They are completely carbon neutral. They are determined to make all of their products carbon neutral so they can create tariff barriers all around the European Union so that they all have to buy these products.
What's Sweden's population?
10 million.
Yeah.
Don't ask how many men and women because they also no longer see that distinction.
Yeah.
They're way ahead on that one, too.
But, you know, when you're running an economy for 10 million people, it's a whole lot different than running an economy for 300 million people. There's things they can do that, you know, these bigger nations just can't implement. You can't do it.
I saw a report from a Swedish academic, and he made a joke saying Sweden has but one export, and we have one trading partner. We export our unemployment to America.
Thanks for
Swedish
that.
National economic strategy.
Yeah,
and I do verily believe it would take forensic accountants to figure it out, but they have various ways in which they're subsidizing a lot of their production. They're a manufacturing company like IKEA and Volvo and Electrolux. It's basically a manufacturing country. But a lot of the lumber and iron is coming through sort of state-owned enterprises, and I think it, they're dumping a lot of stuff in the American market. But what they are absolutely devoted to is the idea of completely emissions-free metal manufactured products. They're the metal that they are producing is carbon free.
Gosh, no, and oh, to live in a world filled with IKEA furniture.
The IKEA furniture and driving a Volvo,
warm and lustrous,
all electric.
Yeah, electric Volvo.
Oh my
Put your Prius to shame.
Well, so you know, just as a nod to the you know, the propaganda. I thought I'd play some a little bit of propaganda music so you had something to hum along with next time you heard your little thing here. So here you go. I am the Earth.
I am the sunset sky.
I thought that'd be like a little pick-me-up after the I Am the Earth song. take that vomit out of the back of your throat.
The music is politics. Music is propaganda. A lot of music is.
It is, isn't it?
All kinds of political themes.
Yeah,
okay,
who knew?
That is a great segue into this topic. Because,
yes.
I mean, who has ever heard of the Bolor family?
The what family?
The Bolors.
How do you spell it?
B-O-L-L-O-R-E, the Bolors.
Huh.
You must have heard of them.
Okay, the hard pass.
Vincent
nope.
Bolor and Yannick Bolor. Anyways, they're a French oligarchic family, and they own a corporation called Vivendi. It's gone through many names over the years. It's been a structured corporation now since 1822, so it's now in 201st year. And amongst other things, the Bolor family manufactures lithium metal polymer batteries for them. The heavy storage for those standalone massive storage units. They've got a key patent on those. They also manufacture electric buses. Few people do that. They have an electric mini car they manufacture. This is all in France, and they run the country's largest car sharing service for electric cars. They're deeply vested in that. But what people also don't know about his family is they own the Universal Music Group.
Oh.
They have the controlling interest of that company. Universal Music Group has 105 labels now. Capitol Records, Island Records, Decca, Def Jam, Deutsche Grammophon, Polydor, Motown, Republic. They have 1,000 recording artists. You go to their Wikipedia page, and you think, well, who doesn't work for these guys? Last year they had 26% of global sales of physical musical products and 34% of global sales of all digital musical products. And their market share in the U.S. is a lot larger than that. Over half of all the music purchased in America is coming from this company.
Aren't they big in publishing as well?
No, that's another subsidiary. The same family owns, it's called Hachette Livre.
Okay.
And it is, I think, the world's third largest book publishing company. That's the same family owns that.
Wow.
But there's another family in Germany called the Mon family, and they have a corporation called Bertelsmann. And Bertelsmann, they just lost a big lawsuit. They tried to buy Simon & Schuster, and that would have been it. The big three would have controlled 100% of the American book publishing industry. But as it is right now, Bertelsmann, they put out 15,000 new titles every year in the English language. When you go into a Barnes & Noble like that, over half the books are coming from one company. And this other company that's owned by Belor and another company called Holdspring together, over 80% of the market. And if you're talking about any publishing dealing with climate and climate science, think in terms of 90-95% of all publishing, scientific or otherwise, on that topic, is coming out of three or four strategic corporations. And that we don't really have a lot of them over here, strategic corporations, but you see them in Europe. A lot of these companies have a history of either being state-owned or quasi-state-owned. They operate hand in glove with their governments to a degree that we really don't see here. And online, there's a report that was put out by Friends of Science that I wrote, and it just profiles eight of these leading European multinationals that are mass media companies. A lot of them are in the advertising world as well. They dominate American advertising as well. And they are all strategic companies. They are all operating in close conjunction with either the French, German, or Swedish governments. And they dominate American culture right now. No two ways about it. And there's a lot of major European multinationals that buy a lot of advertising space in America. And this is being done. I'm increasingly seeing it. They are doing this at a colluded way, such that they can bring more pressure to bear on network television and groups like that. They're using their advertising clout in a very effective political way. And there's a lot of companies. There's a group called the World Council on Sustainable Development, and it has 200 of the world's largest multinationals, and the CEOs of each one of those companies agree to meet once a year. And I checked that list, and there were 97 European companies on there, and a lot of them were like Michelin Tires and Nestle's Food. These are major advertising buyers. And if you add up all that, and you keep in mind that Europe also dominates the advertising industry, you realize that these groups are spending tens of billions of dollars in America in terms of ad purchases and ad manufacturing. And that is why you see these network TV stations are also pro-climate. That's what I believe. I believe there's huge amounts of money coming in a very coordinated fashion from these European companies into the American mass media system.
Are they promoting the whole woke agenda as well? Because, I mean,
yes.
I see so much of that on television now.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
To them, it's all the same thing. It's a fertility suppression campaign. They are also devout environmentalists. They do believe the world is overpopulated. Keep in mind, they have a lot of allies in America. It isn't as though this is entirely this alien thing coming in. They have a profound fifth column of support in America. But yeah, this is all, they are, the climate agenda, it's almost impossible to, unravel it from the environmental movement, but it is different. The climate agenda is a movement of governments aimed at phasing out oil and coal. It is that. Whereas the environmental movement is a much broader thing that has, hundreds of thousands of little organizations that often don't even agree with one another and often are even thwarting the climate agenda. So it's two different things, but they do really come together, and you will find it in Europe. Green parties are frequently coalition government members, and parties like that move the whole spectrum so much further to the green to understand Europe. I don't like to use terms left and right because these are really not being used in a historically coherent fashion anymore. But definitely, the whole agenda regarding LGBT rights and transgenderism and multiculturalism, what have you, yeah, they're big on that.
Yeah, you'd think that, if you watch much television advertising, you would think that 75% of the American population is either gay or trans, because, I mean, it's on every commercial. I always kind of cringe when I see that, because it's not a true representation of what our society looks like.
No, it's a goal. Like they have a very dim view of Americans. A lot of Americans have a very dim view of Americans. They really want a very low birth rate, a low fertility birth rate. There's also a deeply, deeply racist thing going on here. It has always been the fantasy of European enemies of America that the Achilles heel of America would be racial conflict, black versus white, Hispanic versus mm-hmm. white. And if you really look at their cultural agenda, they are systematically fanning racial animosity in America. It looks like they're doing the other, but they're not. I think part of the end game for them is to really start playing that card. And I can establish beyond a shadow of a doubt that rap music was primarily a project of, once again, sort of this European cultural imperialist community. And that rap music, I don't even call it music, it's just crap. And if you listen to it, it is just someone spewing racist, sexist propaganda.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's an interesting take, though. I'd never thought of it that way. Yeah,
well, I just despise that guy. It's propaganda. And, you know, talk about a civics lesson. I mean, they're encouraging the absolutely worst kind of behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The lyrics of race, it's predatory pimping and hard drug dealing. You're making heroes out of these kind of people?
Yeah, yeah.
And that rap music doesn't come from the street. It comes from these big record companies.
Yeah.
Rap music, there was a time when Philips Electric in Holland owned a bunch of record companies. They were the ones, I can't remember the label, but it really kicked off rap music, and they sold that to Bertelsmann, which is now the book publishing people. They used to have a huge music division, but it was under their watch. Several of these really hardcore rap bands started to develop. They were all being promoted by Bertelsmann, which is a strategic German company. And they built this thing up. If you look at who were the real rap stars over the history of rap, they were always assigned on to either the Philips or BMG, and that later got transferred to another European multinational. Like those guys are all puppets.
Yeah, they don't even realize who they're working for.
No, they don't. And I just appalled by this crap. I mean, people like Kanye West, you know, I like musicians. I'm old school. I like musicians that can play a musical instrument. Like, you know, they can sing, they can dance, they can do anything. I mean, this guy's a musician. I don't see any talent whatsoever.
No.
He just seems like a doorknob on the stage. That's so much of rap music. Like, where exactly is none of these guys play musical instruments.
Right.
Their lyrics sound like they're written by a 10-year-old.
Yeah. But they can move and grab their crotch and, you know, get the crowd worked up, and that sells tickets.
And if you listen to the lyrics, it's just this, you know, they're using the N-word all the time.
Oh, yeah.
They're using the B-word all the time. So they're just polluting the cultural atmosphere with this crap. So this is a very regressive influence on American society. It's a very regressive influence on the African-American culture. I mean, that is the last thing you want them to emulate.
Yeah.
You would think.
Well, it's not benefiting society any. That's for sure. I was going to point out to people that on July 10th of last year, and I have that listed on the page for today, but on the web, we have linked your show then, Climate Change and European Cultural Imperialism, and we went into a lot more detail in that show, and it's really worth listening to if people are unaware of that connection with Europe, because, it has become like China versus us, Russia versus us, and China and Ukraine and blah, blah, blah.
It's not to say that, you know, China is suddenly your ally, and I think, you know, there's a real animosity there. But it is just, you know, it's like when after Pearl Harbor, America did not go attack Brazil. I mean, America went to war with the people who did it, Japan. If you look at the climate change campaign, it is fairly obviously orchestrated out of Europe, not that they don't have a lot of allies over here. And not that they, you know, China, as we pointed out, has certainly capitalized on it. And they've become a major player in the climate industrial complex. But this is not their baby. No, this thing definitely came out of Europe.
But it's working for them nonetheless. I mean, what a great deal.
Yes.
If you can get your enemies to destroy themselves, well,
yes,
gosh, you could win a lot faster.
Yeah, I know, but you know, I'm not going to sort of dwell on this too much. They simply are not the people who are driving this. They don't have 1% of the cultural influence that the Europeans are currently exerting on America. The Chinese do not have 1% of that.
No, not especially.
And
not
when you think environmentalism, you don't think, you know, Shanghai.
Yeah, no.
You think Sweden.
Yeah. And those guys, you know, it's the strangest part is it's not working out for them, and yet they don't seem to be reversing course at all.
I don't think they've got any choice. You know, they are doomed if the world stays on a fossil fuel track. I mean, they have bet the farm on this. All of the major European car manufacturers, Volkswagen, BMW, Mercedes, Renault, they have all bet the farm on this. They have built battery manufacturing facilities. They have rejigged their main factories. They are committed irrevocably to electromobility. They've bet the farm. To turn this around now, that can't happen. They passed the point of no return. They've made such an investment in biofuels. They've made such an investment in wind power. I don't see them. This whole generation of government leaders and business leaders that did this, for them now to say this was all a giant mistake, I cannot imagine this happening. No, this has to come crashing down old school. I don't know where it goes.
Well,
obvious that Europe.
I kind of look at the whole battery thing. You know, we were talking at the break. As more and more people embrace this battery technology in vehicles, and look at California, they want everything to go battery by 2035. That's going to put a lot of pressure on battery manufacturers. And do we have the long-term resources to continue to develop and produce high volumes of batteries? I mean, is that...
I don't know. I saw an article about, it was in California, they've got one of these giant battery parks. They look like trailer parks.
Yeah.
And the thing cost $550 million.
Oh!
And it's just an array of batteries. You know, the amount of electricity you could make if you put that into coal or any other form of electricity, it's a joke. They're wasting money on that. But it's a good point. Like, I don't know how far in the future these people think, but you think there would be some major log jams and bottlenecks in getting supplies for that many batteries.
The resources.
But they're also great believers in recycling batteries, too. So
I don't know. I just look at the amount of resources required to make these batteries and the amount of energy required to make these batteries. And as the demand increases, the strain on these resources is going to increase. And I just don't see it.
Well, it just doesn't make sense. Every time you have like a big holiday, you have a big storm, anytime there's an event that takes people out of their normal everyday tracking, you see the jam up, right? You've got all these people at the battery charging thing, and it's just not functional. And again, maybe if we were in a different scenario, but we drive long miles, especially people who live in the rural parts of both of our countries, in Canada and in the U.S. You don't have a battery thing every 200 miles or whatever fool thing it is. It just isn't workable. Hey, so we have to take a quick break, and in deference to bad music, I thought I would play pretty much the worst climate song I've ever found. Oh, here he is. He's on.
See a temperature rising, while mighty glaciers weep. I look at you now, see your oceans arising, while nations are lost in the deep. I don't know why. told you they stole and fooled you.
Yep. So the Beatles probably filing a lawsuit right now against the perpetrator of When Mighty Glaciers Weep.
That's a horrible song.
That's actually the worst version of it, too. If you go to YouTube, there's several versions of it. The guy was really proud of it. He got his friends to sing along with him. And, yeah. It's pretty bad, but that's what passes for propaganda in the climate world.
Well, if you go to that Universal Music Group's website, they have a section on there on climate change. They have one of the things that they are mobile. They quite openly say that music is culture and that they are in the culture business. They're not at all shy about the fact that they are using the UMG is using music to promote this. But back to what we were getting at about, you know, are there going to be enough batteries? How is this going to work?
Yeah.
Look at Los Angeles County. Look at all those cars. I mean, how is that all going to get powered up on batteries? It simply isn't going to work very well. If it works at all, and you're going to end up seeing a lot of disrupted transportation, and you're going to see a lot of brownouts and other problems. You're going to see sort of a third worldization of the California economy. That's what you're going to get. Because we've got to get back to square one here. This really is an economic warfare campaign. If you listen to the Mark Moranos and the Tucker Carlsons and the Alex Joneses, whenever they get onto climate, they start screaming, this is crazy. This is nuts. They're destroying America's oil industry. This is absolutely crazy. We're going to end up, you know, screwed. It's not crazy. Okay? It would be crazy if it was entirely domestic thing, like Americans just started running out of their houses screaming about carbon dioxide and saying that, you know, we've got to completely change our energy system.
Yeah.
That would be crazy. But that never happened. This was a systematic campaign starting at the top government level and promoted. It wasn't a mass uprising. This wasn't an act of mass hysteria. This is a political program. And it's the fact that our governments have been so hijacked by the Europeans and their allies within our countries that they're getting away with this. But this is not an accident, and this is not mass hysteria. So when you confront an issue like, well, how is this really going to work? This is going to, when you realize this is going to lead to major transportation and electrical disruption. This is going to really impoverish the people of America. Well, if this is an economic warfare campaign, that is what it is supposed to do. If this is a rational energy plan, it's ridiculous. It simply wouldn't happen. The American people would not abandon coal. They would not abandon the internal combustion engine if it was left up to them and it was truly a democracy. Something is being imposed on America. And it is going to be very bad news for America if they destroy the coal and oil industries. You're going to start looking like Somalia or Honduras. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people realize that, much like the lumber industry, when you shut down the big mills you don't produce that product anymore, you can't just go back in, turn the lights on, start producing lumber again. Same thing with the coal industry. You shut those coal plants down.
Yeah, the infrastructure
is screwed. I mean, it's going to take a long time.
And the human skills.
Yes.
You lose the human skills of lumberjacks and things like that in a generation. It's not easy to get that back. You need people to train people consecutively.
Right.
And so, yeah, you do devastating harm to the economy when you kill an industry like that.
Yep.
And it's happening now.
Well, you look at how that has morphed over time, and this other thing will do the same deal. You know, back when they had the Spotted Owl and the Earth First Movement,
yes,
and all that stuff, all kind of happened around the same time, all pointed at destroying the timber industry and saving trees,
yes,
and blah blah blah. Well, when they did that, not only did the mills go away, but you took our people out of the forest. So they weren't in the forest. Now the forests are overgrowing. Well, what do you hear about now in the West? Nothing but unending fires.
Yeah, there's far too much fuel out there.
And there's nobody
I'm
out
there. I'm a
great
believer in clearing these forests.
Well, the timber companies were out there.
Converting them into agricultural land. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, what is a tree for?
Yeah.
Well, the war in the woods that happening in the Pacific Northwest, definitely in Canada, profoundly shrank the size of that industry. It was based on just absolute lies. I mean, just get one lie after the other. For one thing, that spotted owl was being rendered extinct by another owl called the barn owl. The barn owls were eating the little spotted owls, and there's not a lot humanity could really do about this, unless we're really in the business of sort of intervening to protect their species that are endangered that way. You know, 99.99% of all the species that ever existed on Earth have gone extinct, and they didn't get killed by industry. They got extinct by Mother Nature.
Right. And yeah, but the knee-jerk reaction is to jump in and save them, you know. And
save this spot from the barn owl.
Yeah, exactly.
what's the barn owl supposed to eat? It's a pretext. It's a phony pretext, just like climate change. You know, at some levels in the inner sanctums, they know these stories are bogus. There's a priceless book by Alston Chase called In a Dark Wood, and it's about the campaign to destroy Seattle, Washington State's, and then Oregon's forest industries. And someone smuggled a tape recorder into an Environmental Grant Makers Association meeting. And one of the alpha males in the room made this comment: the problem is not that Joe Sixpack doesn't know what's going on. The problem is that Joe Sixpack does know what's going on. He's losing his job, and he's not getting it back. And that the same is going to apply to the oil patch, the coal industry. Joe Sixpack knows what's going on, but he's just powerless to do anything about it.
Right. Right.
Yes. And that you can't... You don't roll back from a lot of that right away. You just don't.
It's far from terminal. I mean, right now, I think it's reversible.
It is. It's always reversible. It just takes time.
Yeah. Well, I said, I'm very optimistic. I think things are really coming to a crescendo. I think the scales are falling from people's eyes, and they're starting to see this climate campaign is something that's really sinister. Like, keep in mind, we all agree this whole climate science is BS. It's a flimsy hypothesis. It's a B-movie plot. It's a scare plot. It's all it is. But once you acknowledge that this is a deliberate lie, then suddenly the people that are perpetrating this become a whole lot more insidious. Like, these people really are trying to destroy America's economy. And they're having boardroom meetings where they calculate various improved strategies for doing this. Your attitude towards the people who are doing this is no longer just a bunch of flaky professors riding a gravy train. No, these are people who are calculating to undermine the critical infrastructure of the American economy. That is what is going on here.
Well, you've got the academia pumping all these kids full of crap, and now they've come to the age of having to go out and get a job and support themselves, and all they've been taught is all this propaganda. So, you know, what's left for them to do but basically, you know, revolt and try to push this agenda on everybody else, because they don't know any different.
You're talking about the sort of the young eco-activist types.
Yes.
Increasingly, I see them. This is debatable. I see them as entirely mercenary. I don't think the climate movement has any street creds left at all. And that is debatable. There's some stuff from George Mason University's Climate Change Communication Department, and they're claiming there's 8 million Americans willing to participate in civil disobedience for the climate. I don't think so.
Nah, I don't think so either.
When Greta called her last rally in Sweden, 15 kids showed up.
No kidding.
Really? Oh, that's encouraging.
They've got no street kids. It's like AOC now. She's getting heckled everywhere she goes.
Well, she's running out of time.
They're increasingly looking like political actresses. You know, they're losing it. And I don't think this whole climate campaign is going to mobilize any volunteerism. To the extent to which you see people sitting down on the road, they're going to be paid to sit there. And that becomes an expensive proposition. Although there's some of these institutes like Climate Works Foundation and the Energy Works Foundation, these are groups that have budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's possible that you want to see a mercenary operation. They can deliver that. You know, they're going to get thousands of people and pay them to sit on the road. But it's going to be all rent-a-mob. I recall I arrived on the West Coast just after the end of the great wars in the forest. I wouldn't have participated anyway. But having spoken to a lot of people who did participate, back in the day they did have street cred. You know, it was only, you know, a few dozen professional organizers could mobilize a couple of hundred people. You know, often with a lot of sort of like freebies and free lunches and what have you. But that, those days are gone. I believe that they have just sort of, they've used up whatever they've had in terms of your real popular sentiment.
And yeah, and how long can you follow Al Gore's handbook and everything in it has not happened, you know? So
it's that whole Al Gore guy. They don't exactly inspire, you know, a self-sacrificing sort of martyr for the cause.
But the idea that, you know, we're done in 10 years and then the 10 years passes and then 10 years goes by and then more 10 years and, you know, none of their things have worked out the way they have said.
Yeah, they're decades of false prophecies.
Yeah.
Except for that latest guy.
What collusion with the media. Go ahead.
Did you follow that? I can't think of his name. The latest guy who was wrong about everything, and he somehow...
Paul Ehrlich?
Yeah, is that who it was? And he became like a big... all of a sudden he was back on, I think it was 60 Minutes or something.
Yeah, this is Paul Ehrlich. He's the guy that wrote The Population Bomb. Rewrote it. He plagiarized it in 1968, sold millions of copies. Yeah, we were all going to starve to death in the 70s. And then every time they ask him, he just bumps it ahead 10, 15 years, somehow claims that it's actually happening when it isn't. And they still make a hero out of this guy. He's clearly been absolutely wrong at every prediction since 1968, for 54 years of wrong predictions, and he still gets an hour on CBS. But he's the ultimate population control fanatic. He was the guy who explicitly was advocating pouring sterilants into urban water supplies to prevent women from having kids. Like, he's an over-the-top population control fanatic, and that is why they keep resurrecting that dinosaur.
Wow.
The grifter of all grifters.
Well, we made millions off that population bomb. It was just hyped to the moon. I remember that.
Well, when we did that show with you about population control. That was June 24th of 2018. It's all on the page for today if people want to go look at that. We're actually broadcasting live on January 15th, 2023, and you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. I would go back and listen to that show if you still have some concern about the population thing, because I think that was pretty well...
Yeah, it was. That was a great show.
Pretty well peeled apart, and you gave us a whole bunch of resources for that. So we have basically hit the end of the road here with you. William,
yeah.
We'll chat soon because we have a lot to talk about with all this kind of stuff, and we appreciate all your good research.
My pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks,
we'll have
a million. All right, stay warm up there. See you guys next week.
We got minds to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. for good.